the frontier was exposed.
No,
the Romans lost the Rhine frontier by default. They never were conscious of another great power, because the only thing like Rome was in China, and it was so many thousand miles away. Now, we have a stimulus that the Romans never had. We know about Russia. And someday we may both know about China.
I like what you probably know. Do you know what the little corporal said about China?
What?
I can't say it verbatim, but it was beautiful. He said something in China, didn't know if they're taking drugs, but I like to say, they get away from the probably each.
There was one Russian diplomat told some American. He said, you know, we have our differences. But he said, if the Chinese ever really get atomic energy, he says, we will compose those differences very quickly.
And they were fun.
Yes. Well, the Chinese have abilities, don't sell them short. When Genghis Khan looked the world over, and he fought successfully on two fronts, he decided to concentrate the Mongol assault on China, because China was so rich, so civilized, so progressive, and Europe was such a lean place. That was about 1200 AD.
What about him riding in now, man?
What?
About
70 volumes. What
70
volumes? Yeah, 50. Oh, there aren't 70. There's only about... there's only about 30.
Well, happy to see you all.
Greetings, sir.
Nice to see you. How is it, Father?
Fine.
Mabel, how are you?
I can turn your taper off.
How are you?
Fine, Mr. Wilson. Nice to see you.
Burke was talking about the difference between deity and God. Of course, this is word usage. The biggest word in my conception is the word reality, capitalized. That's everything. And the word reality would be roughly synonymous with the word infinity, or the infinite, or the infinitude, or the infinite one. Reality subdivides into two categories, deity reality and non-deity reality. Simplest examples I can give are the Isle of Paradise and Eternal Sun. The Eternal Sun is the perfect expression of deity reality, or the second source of center was a better designation. The Isle of Paradise is not deity, it's a thing, it's an it, it's a machine, it's an absolute machine. It's the machine which God personally built, for the same reason that men build machines, to perform a repetitive, mechanical act. Paradise is complicated. Paradise is knowing in some way. Paradise is not unconscious. But the forward instructs me, it's not conscious as I can ever possibly understand the meaning of that term. Let's take the Eternal Sun as an example of deity. The second source and center is the name I would apply to the deity of the second person of deity. The second source and center is other than personal as well as personal, or gives rise to other than personal beings, sustains a relationship to all the beings who are native to the world, to the Eternal Sun and the near regions of paradise. The word God is smaller than the word deity. Now we are thinking of the personality of deity. The personality of man is not all of a functioning human being. He has a body, he has toenails, he has lenses in his eyes. You follow me? This is the essence of the man, but not all of the man. God is the essence of the first source and center, but not all of the first source and center. The word Son is an abstraction out of the word God, or better still, the word Father. This now connotes relationship of a personal God to his personal creature. When you think of divine personality in relation to deity, if you separate the two, or rather recognize you're on different levels, then you can understand Trinity much better. Let's take the illustration that's used in paper 10. Three people organize a partnership. That's an association. It's recognized in law as an association, but it is not a legal entity. You can't sue a partnership, you sue the partners. Nevertheless, a partnership is a functional grouping of these three men. Now let's say that these three men happen to be father, son, and grandson. They also organize a corporation. They're equal stockholders, and they elect themselves as the three directors of that corporation. I have a name for that corporation. It's Undivided Deity Incorporated. And that is the Paradise Trinity. The Trinity is a corporate entity, just as a corporation is a legal entity. Now you've got to remember that God can be in more than one place at the same time. Have you got that definite? I want you to think of father, son, and grandson. They're sitting as directors of Undivided Deity Incorporated, and they are always sitting as directors at the same time. They're out here as persons, and they're contactable as persons. And as persons, they can do business with the corporation. Any one or two of them can do business with the corporation as deities, but all three of them can't, because that is the corporation. The three of them have no external collective relationship as deities to the Trinity, because the three deities together, that is the Trinity. They also have a partnership association. That's called the First Triunity. It will help if we consider the difference in function. Taken from the papers, the association of three persons as persons is a triunity. It is not a trinity. The three persons or groups can have no personal relationship to such a triunity. A triunity is a threefold functional unanimity. A triunity is not an entity. It is a functional grouping rather than an organic reality. Its members are like partners. It is an association in contrast to a corporation. A triunity is to a trinity as function is related to structure. The triunity is a functional grouping. A trinity is a structural grouping. The first triunity is the association of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. The functions of the first triunity are the threefold union of love, mercy, and ministry. It is divinely fraternal, creature loving, fatherly acting, and ascension promoting. Its members are personality bequeathing, spirit bestowing, and mind endowing gods. In contrast to this, the functions of the Paradise Trinity are justice administration, totality attitude, coordinate action, and cosmic over control. The Paradise Trinity appears to be concerned only with the total. Total planet, total universe, total super universe, total grand universe. There's no comparison between those two functions either. The first triunity is nothing to do with justice and totality. But the Paradise Trinity is the source of justice. A trinity is a real entity. It is not a personality, but it is a true reality. Its reality as an entity is compatible with the reality of the personalities who are together in it. Trinity is deity reality, and it is more than just the adding together of the attributes of its constituent members. The functions of the Trinity cannot be deduced from an examination of the attributes of its constituent personality. A Trinity is not personal, but neither does it contravene personality. Trinity encompasses personality and correlates it in a collective sense with impersonal functions. The personal deities have attributes. A Trinity has functions. The only personal aspect of a Trinity is the personalities of its members. But as persons, such members are not a Trinity. As a collective union, they are a Trinity. That is Trinity. The corporative members of a Trinity can collaborate in a non-Trinity manner, but not as deities. As persons, they can collaborate as they choose, but that is not the Trinity. Only deity can become Trinity. A Trinity is always deity reality. It is never personality reality. A Trinity is always inclusive of all encompassed deity. A Trinity is deity unity. Trinity functions always encompass deity reality. Deity realities always tend to personalize. The end results of Trinity functions, therefore, give rise to new personalizations of deity. The binding force that holds together the structure of a Trinity, or a multiple Trinity, must be divinity, the characteristic unifying and coordinating quality of deity. We know that pattern may configure matter, mind, or spirit, or any combination of them. It can characterize personality, identity, entity, or non-living matter. It appears as a reality because of the coexistence of personality and power. In the higher sense, pattern appears because of the coexistence of deity and energy. I think this will help you understand a Trinity. Two objects have relationships, but if there are three or more, they eventuate a system. Such a system is something more than a relationship that has become complex. Its members are connected not by a relationship of each part to other parts, but rather by a relationship of each part to the whole. Each one of the parts has a positional value in relation to the pattern of the whole. In a human being, it is personality that unifies the whole. And in the structure of a Trinity, it must be divinity. It is the arrangement of the parts, their positional value, that constitutes the pattern of the whole, with its unpredictable factors and its super-additive qualities. A Trinity is a super-summation of its constituent parts. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and the functions of the whole are more than and other than the predictable sum of the total of the collective attributes of the parts. To illustrate this, let us establish the difference between a non-pattern aggregation and the pattern of a system. The simplest system requires three parts. So let us take three objects of the same size, say three pennies, and let them fall at random on a tabletop. They fall by chance, and their positions have no particular significance, no meaningful relationship. This is a chance action, and we end up with three pennies on top of the table, and nothing more. Now, let us do this all over again, but differently. We pick up the three pennies, but this time we place them very carefully on the table. We place them in such a manner that they make a perfect triangle. We still have three pennies on top of the table, but now we also have a triangle. Each penny now has a positional value, but this positional value is not due to the parts. It is due to the significance which the whole imparts to its members. The triangle is the gestalt. There is no English word for it. Configuration of the whole comes close. Pattern of the whole is better, but neither is quite right. Triangularity is a quality of the whole that could not be predicted by any prior analysis of any of the parts. The appearance of such a pattern of the whole signifies mind action and purpose in imposing the pattern of a system on what would otherwise be a mere aggregation. To me, Trinity is the gestalt of three deities in union. And I can think of no better simple illustration than the three pennies. When you put those three pennies in the proper arrangement on the tabletop, you've got something you didn't have before. You have a triangle. And you didn't create that triangle, it eventuated. And that's a good use of the word eventuate. A happening that was there all the time in potential. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to visualize, in dealing with, say, the Universal Father, he can maintain the triangle of the Trinity at the same time he can leave there and work elsewhere. He's not space limited as we are, or time limited. No. Actually, when we say the Paradise Trinity is made up of Father, Son, and Spirit, that is a misnomer. Because we should say the Trinity is made up by the three existential deities of Paradise. It is as deities that they constitute the Trinity. Now we'll go right on saying Father, Son, and Spirit because it's a good, convenient, but loose usage of the term. I think it's proper to say that God, that the Supreme Being, is a member of the first and second experiential Trinity. I don't think we would be technically correct in saying God the Supreme has such membership. God the Supreme is the personality, the personalization of the Supreme Being. And his Trinity membership is as deity, not as personality. We get a touch of this in the official and the personal relationship in life. If you had a friend who was, let's say, a federal judge, you meet him on the street and you say, "Hi, Joe." He went to school with you. But in court, you'd address him as Your Honor. On the street, he would reflect a personal attitude of friendship. But if he functioned as a judge with a personal attitude of friendship, he would be betraying his trust, wouldn't he? On the bench, he should mete out impartial justice regardless of whether you are plaintiff or defendant, his old schoolmate. In the concept of a judge, we begin to get a little of the difference between the personal attitude of God and the justice attitude of the Trinity. Now, the papers instruct me that Trinity justice and God's love are identical when viewed from the Paradise perspective. They also tell me that I will never be able to understand this in time and space. I'll have to take it on faith. Of course, they have to be identical, but they certainly don't look that way out here. I can get the best feeling for this if you will consider a parent's attitude in relation to a child. If a parent is unwisely soft in raising a child, then that child grows up soft and is unfitted for life. So the parent is not really kind, is the parent. If the parent is really kind and truly wise, then I can see where the attitude of love and the attitude of justice would come out to the same end. This is the most loving thing that could be done for little Johnny in the long run. But you could never sell that bill of goods to Johnny at the time. You know, this hurts me worse than it hurts you. Or have any of you ever heard that? Does that help on?
Very much so.
May I ask
a question?
Yes. The personality of the Supreme
comes from
the
Paradise
Trinity.
Yes.
Is that personality, or is that personality justice?
It's the personality of the Supreme. And it's the personality which the Universal Father would have had he been a finite God.
It would be a different type of personality than is bestowed by the universal Father.
I'm not so sure that he has been given his personality to himself. I think the entity of God the Supreme came from the Trinity. But I think the Father bestowed personality upon him. The Ancients of Days were created by the Trinity, but they got their personality from God the Father. Unless the conjoint actor bestowed it acting for the Father. There's only two ways you can get personality. It's either direct from the Father, or the Infinite Spirit acting as his attorney in fact.
No.
That's right. And such beings are in the Father's personality present. I think it's just as though God himself had asked it. There's no difference. The Infinite Spirit is attorney in fact for about everyone, including the incomplete Supreme Being. He makes up the difference. On the level of actuality, just as the Universal Absolute compensates all things from his standpoint. You think of your friend the judge in the back room and on the bench, and you've got a very helpful distinction between God as a person and God as deity or in the Trinity. See, when you deal with the Universal Father, you're in trouble because you go right back into reality itself. You ponder the fact that paradise is just as much a revelation of the first source and center as is the second source and center. They're equal but opposite revelations of the first source and center. Because God is the Lord of universes as well as the Father of persons. He bosses the physical creation as well as allures the personal creation. When they try to classify reality, they do fine. Say, sun, paradise, and spirit, absolute in actuality. Deity, universal, unqualified absolute, absolute in potentiality. The first source and center, well, now wait a minute. We better just set up a special category for him. We'll call him the original. They won't classify him as either actual or potential. He's original. He's actual and potential. And something else besides actual and potential. To me, the concept of the infinite is the final concept. The papers speak of the movements of the cosmos representing the infinite in his eternal manipulation of the absolute. The infinite to me is the end. This is pre-existential, post-experiential. This is before the beginning of beginnings and after the end of all endings. When I want to find the infinite on the level of the absolute, I find him. He's the first source and center. When I want to find him in the level of divinity, he's deity, original deity. When I want to find him at the level of personality, he's God. When I want to talk to him, he's my Father. Now, that is why the Eternal Son is such an exquisite explanation of God, because in the Eternal Son, we have the Father completely divorced from all that is extra divine and undeified. The Son is a focalization of the deity and personality aspects of God. And I believe the Divine Counselor when he says that we, all of us, understand God better when we study the Son. Because it's less complicated. This is a clear-cut, perfect, eternal, and final revelation of God who is Spirit. But there's also God who is energy. And you look at paradise and just shake your head and see. This also is a manifestation of God, coordinate with the Son. Now, what kind of God is this? This is incomprehensible. So you go right back to the Son when you try to understand it. And then when we consider a Son of the Eternal Son, then we have God on the anthropomorphic level in the human life of Jesus and you really could feel God. To me, this thing starts with the infinite and ends with the carpenter. From the greatest mystery to an exquisitely understandable portraiture. But Jesus never revealed the first source and center. Neither did he reveal the deity of the first source and center. He revealed the Father. The relationship which God maintains to man. That aspect of God.
The God of
mm-hmm. Look, what is God in relation to a thought adjuster? Thought adjuster is not a person, so God cannot be father of the thought adjuster. What is the relationship of God to a transcendentaler who is a super person, who was not created, who was eventuated? He's something else, isn't he? Even in the deity side, there are relationships which are other than father, but not other than divine, not other than deity. But when you look to paradise and the material universes, now you're looking at relationships which are extra divine and undeified. And of course, when you conceive of God as the infinite, he encompasses the seven absolutes. I think of one good way of looking at this. It's a symbolization of the sevenfold relationship to the I Am that they give in. Think of paper on deity and reality. Think of a cube. Get a good, nice, wheeled cube, you know. Big. It's got six sides, hasn't it? I think of each of these six faces of the cube as symbolizing the first source and center in relationship to one of the six absolutes. And the seventh face is internal. It's the relationship of the first source and center to himself. Remember, it starts out, it says, I am Father of the Eternal Son. I'm going to identify these facets now. And I'd be smart if I get this over. I might bobble number six and a few of them. Better I look it up and prove that I don't remember. I think I would have on this one. I am Father of the Eternal Son. That's one facet. That's his relationship to the Son. I am cause of eternal paradise. It's his relationship to the isle. I am one with the Eternal Son. It's his relationship to the concarnation. I am self-associative. It's his relationship to the universal absolute. I am self-qualified. It's his relationship to the deity absolute. I am static reactive. His relationship to the universal absolute. Now we've used up the six sides. The last relationship is internal. I am as I am. His relationship to himself. As they go on to say, this is the stasis or self-relationship of infinity. The eternal fact of infinity reality, the universal truth of reality infinity. Insofar as this relationship is discernible as personality, it is revealed to the universes and the divine father of all personality, even of absolute personality. Insofar as this relationship is impersonally expressible, it is contacted by the universe as the absolute coherence of pure energy and pure spirit in the presence of the universal father. Insofar as this relationship is conceivable as an absolute, is revealed in the primacy of the first source and center. In him we all live and move and have our being, from the creature of space to the citizens of paradise. And this is just as true of the master universe as of the infinitesimal ultimaton, just as true of what is to be as of that which is and of what has been. In other words, this is large. This is quite large. Right. Now, I visualize this cube. I see these six relationships. I see if you please, six spheres, you know, each one facing one of the facets of the cube. But then I can circumscribe that whole pattern with a circle. That's the infinite. That's the infinite. That's my symbolization of the infinite. And if I could ever find the infinite, I would discover he is the Father infinite. This I will never do. This is not doable. But I think we'll know the Father is absolute, partially. I think we'll understand the Father as finite, because we'll understand the Supreme Being. I think we will someday understand the Father as absonite, because someday, believe it or not, we're going to understand God the ultimate. I think we will get to know the Father absolute, but never understand him. And I can't improve on what the universal censor growls out at us in the last sentence in paper number 10. Only infinity could disclose the Father infinite. This you can't get there from that. But you can keep trying.
You talked about
the draft. Yeah. There's a football game from at the top of the ninth and two out, and the score tied.
Yeah, I can spend about 35 points behind that.
I would like to know how we can get more of that big universe antecedent. Relationship to paradise in the master universe, space levels of the master universe, the universe ages and the levels of total deity function. That's what I read you from this morning. Associations of dual deity, transformative techniques. Don't ask for that, it's not written. Fourth creatures, mechanisms of experiential growth, the first experiential trinity, the post-supreme ages, future expansion of God the Sevenfold, evolution of universe suns and spirits, expanding influence of the master spirits, numbers and the architects of the master universe, space and mass magnitudes of the master universe, time magnitudes of the master universe, the nature of God the ultimate, the second experiential trinity, the post-ultimate age, the cosmos infinite, power personality synthesis, the trinity of trinities, an extension of the levels of total deity function. I read you the introduction of that. The balance of these haven't been written. The nature of the deity absolute, the nature of the unqualified absolute, the nature of the universal absolute, and the concept of the infinite. Those are 28 essays.
I'd like to hear some discussion, like personally, on growth and the power of personality.
All right. Why don't we take a look at the mechanisms of experiential growth. Do you want me to tape this and then we'll discuss it?
Yes.
All right.
You're already on.
This is the ninth appendix, entitled The Mechanisms of Experiential Growth. As we pass from the age of Havona to the present universe age, there's a change in the growth potential of the central universe. In the first age, Havona was entirely non-evolutionary, non-growing. In the second age, Havona certainly has the evolutionary earmarks of association with the superuniverses. How did this come about? If we can understand this change, then we can better forecast what may happen in the grand universe when the second age ends and we enter upon the ages of the outer universes. These future ages will be characterized by a growth process that is post-supreme in nature. Section 1, the sources of growth. Original, actual, and potential. There are quite a number of ways of classifying the seven absolutes of infinity, page 5, paragraph 1 to 7. One of these ways is to put them in three categories, original, actual, and potential. And we are informed that the interaction of these three accounts for growth on all levels, sevenfold, supreme, and ultimate, page 1262, paragraph 6. The papers have much to say about these classifications. First of all, the original is defined as, page 1262, paragraph 3, the first source and center, the source from which all reality takes origin, paragraph 8, that which is a time concept, paragraph 9, that which balances all the outgoing and the incoming motions of growth. Secondly, the actual is defined as. Page 1262, paragraph 4. The three absolutes of actuality, the eternal Son, the infinite Spirit, and the Isle of Paradise. Page 1151, paragraph 3 to 7. The triadity of actuality, Son, Spirit, and Paradise. The total of all actualized reality, matter, mind, and spirit. Page 1262, paragraph 7. The triadity in which actuality is absolute. Potentials are emergent. Page 131, paragraph 3. The gravity control of spirit, mind, and matter, centering respectively in the Son, the Spirit, and the Isle of Paradise. Page 1262, paragraph 8. Actuals are defined as that which was and which is. This is the time concept of actuals. Paragraph 9. Actuality is substance. It is existent at the center and is expanding out into infinity at the periphery. Thirdly, the potential is defined as. Page 1262, paragraph 5. The three absolutes of potentiality, the deity absolute, the unqualified absolute, and the universal absolute. Page 1151, paragraphs 8 to 12. The triadity of potentiality, the association of the three absolutes, deity, unqualified, and universal. The sum total of the unlimited reservoirs of unexpressed energy, spiritual, mindful, or cosmic energy. In potential, it is infinite. 1262, paragraphs 7 and 8 and 9. The triadity in which potentials are absolute and actuals are emerging. Potentials are defined as that which is becoming and which will be. This is the time concept. Potentiality is capacity. It is incoming from peripheral infinity and is converging at the center of all things. Growth, whether creative or evolutional, is not a process of getting something for nothing. It is a matter of the interchange of reality from the potential level of existence to the actual level of existence, an interchange between the potential and the actual in the presence of the original. Concerning these transactions, the papers say, page 83, paragraph 4, Spirit emerges from the potential of the deity absolute. It evolves in conjunction with the supreme and the ultimate, and is finally grasped by the spirit gravity circuit of the eternal Son. Page 9, paragraph 8 and 9. Cosmic force emerges from the space presence of the unqualified absolute, and becomes subject to the absolute gravity grasp of paradise. In the intermediate stages of energy emergence, it is influenced by the ultimate and by the supreme. Page 1263, paragraph 3. The final dynamics of the cosmos have to do with the continual transfer of reality from potentiality to actuality. We have here a reasonably clear picture of the mechanisms of growth in terms of source and destiny. All new things, physical, spiritual, or mindful, emerge from the potential by a creative or an evolutional process, and eventually are grasped by someone or more of the gravity circuits centering in the actual. This statement is true for purposes of this particular discussion, but there are more than two creative and evolutional transformative processes. Section 2, the maturation of potential. Maturation, bringing to maturity. Growth in the Master Universe is a sub-absolute process. It is taking place on the finite level, in time and space, and on the absolute level, in transcended time and space. This means that something has to operate on the potentials of the absolutes in order to downstep them to the point where they can be handled on sub-absolute levels and by sub-absolute beings. Page 262, paragraph 10. The potential, the absolutes, never functions as such on sub-absolute levels. Page 136, paragraph 4. The presence performance of the absolutes
and the activities of the ultimate always precede the work of the time-space creator. Page 137, paragraph 3. Within the master universe, the ultimate is working out the creative organization of the absolutes of potentiality. Page 1281, paragraph 5. The supreme is the channel that carries the creative potential of the triadities, and this is the stuff out of which the superuniverses and their native beings are created. Page 1296, paragraph 7. Creators really are transformative creators. Page 1261, paragraph 3 and 4. Experiential creation and evolution is the conversion of potentialities into actualities, and this equally applies to the potency of spirit, to space potency, or to mind potency. We can now elaborate our concept of the mechanisms of experiential growth. The basic potentials are absolute and must become sub-absolute before they can be utilized on absonite and on finite levels of existence. This modification of absolute potentials is the work of the ultimate and the supreme. And when they have completed their work, then such modified potentials are serviceable to the creators and controllers of the time-space universes. In the larger sense, an act of creation is an act of transformation, the transformation of a matured potential into a bona fide actual. As an illustration of this, we are informed, page 418, paragraph 4, that a local universe creative spirit may create seraphim in unit formation, 41,472 at a time. As we picture this episode, at one moment, there are no such seraphim. And the next moment, there they are, all 41,472 of them. But they did not come from nothing or nowhere. They came, emerged, from something that was somewhere. The something was a matured potential, and the somewhere must have been the presence of the Supreme. Just in case this seems altogether simple and clear, we can complicate it just a little. The Infinite Spirit and the Master Spirits are in some way involved in some parts of the transformative process. Page 469, paragraph 8, and page 190, paragraph 5 and 6. This is true, at least as concerns the maturation of physical force into emergent energy, and then to the level of universe power. Section 3, the conditioning of growth by experiential deity. The experiential deity does something more than simply mature the absolute potentials of growth to those sub-absolute levels on which such potentials are serviceable to the creators and the organizers of universes. In this process, the experiential deities impart their respective natures to such matured potentials. These matured potentials are existent within the presences of experiential deity. The Master Universe Space Presence, Omnipresence of the Ultimate, page 1296, paragraph 4, and the Grand Universe Ubiquity, Multi-Presence of the Supreme, page 1296, paragraph 6. Page 1263, paragraph 2. The actual triadity serves as the center of all actualized existence. In the finite realms, it functions in and upon the ultimate as he is conditioned by the Supreme. Page 1264, paragraph 5. The actual and the potential triadities appear on the finite level in conjunction with the Supreme. They so appear by both direct and indirect techniques. They are manifest by direct repercussion in the Supreme and by indirect derivation through the absonite. Page 1283, paragraph 2. Man was not created by the Supreme, but the potentiality of the Supreme provided the wherewithal out of which man emerged. Man was not created by the Supreme, but the potentiality of the Supreme provided the wherewithal out of which man emerged. Finite creatures have their existence within the Supreme Being. It appears that the nature of the Supreme not only makes possible the growth of finite creatures, but in turn, determines the nature of such creatures. They become like the Supreme. This is even more understandable when we consider the conditioning of the growth process within a given superuniverse. Each of the superuniverses is dominated by the master spirit of jurisdiction. The unique nature of the supervising spirit so permeates the superuniverse concern that all native life will forever bear this badge of natal distinction. This is true because each master spirit actually pervades his superuniverse. Page 190, paragraph, section 5. In like manner, the Supreme is conditioning all growth in the grand universe, and so will the ultimate, in turn, condition growth in the master universe of the ages to come. Section 4, growth of the Supreme, growth in the second age. If we examine certain statements made in the papers, we may clarify our thinking concerning the origin, functions, growth, and unification of the Supreme Being. Page 1151, paragraph 13. The actual and the potential triodities are concerned directly in the growth and appearance of the experiential deity. Page 1265, paragraph 6. The Supreme is in motion intensively toward the actuals at the center and extensively toward the potentials at the periphery. Page 1264, paragraph 2. God the Supreme, as a spirit person, derives from the Paradise Trinity. The growth of the Supreme derives from the actual and the potential triodities. Page 1304, paragraph 4. In functions, the Almighty is related to the Paradise Trinity. In growth, the Almighty centers on the actual and predicates on the potential. Page 1264, paragraph 7. The growth of supremacy depends on the actual and the potential triodities, but the power of the Almighty depends on the successes of God the Sevenfold. The synthesis of Almighty power with the spirit person supreme is by the action of the Supreme Mind, which was bestowed by the Infinite Spirit. The Supreme derives his spirit person from the Trinity and his almighty power from the sevenfold. And these are being united to the Supreme Mind. His acts are related to Trinity functions, but the actual stuff out of which and with which he is growing is derived from the absolute potential and is based on the absolute actual. From nothing comes only nothing. We may properly deduce that all of the growth that is characteristic of the second age is due to the incompleteness of the Supreme and to the fact that we are participating in and contributing to his growth. Page 1281, paragraph 2 and 3. Finite experience with imperfect choice is possible only because we are participants in the growth of supremacy. Page 1300, paragraph 8. Error in finite choosing is time-bound and time limited. It can exist only in time and within the evolving presence of the Supreme. This type of growth, growth in and with the Supreme, is peculiar to the second age. It began when the Supreme began to grow. It will end when his growth has come to an end. Page 1264, paragraph 6. Total finite reality, and this is supreme reality, is growing dynamically between the absolutes of potentiality in outer space and the absolutes of actuality at the Paradise Center. Page 353, paragraph 8. Sometime the Supreme will have completed his growth, and the chance to be a participant in this experience will be forever gone. Does the growth pattern of the evolving Supreme completely pervade the grand universe with no exceptions? The answer to this question is no.
What?
Section 5. Growth, past, present, and future. The papers tell us, page 1280, section 2, that the present inhabitants of the grand universe classify into three major groups as they are related to the typical evolutionary growth of the second age. Group 1, status as of the previous universe age. These persons include the Trinity origin beings, like the stationary sons of the Trinity. together with some of their Trinity-embraced associates. These beings are outside the sphere of evolutionary growth. Divine counselors do not grow, neither do mighty messengers. Group 2. Status as of the present universe age. These are creatures like human beings, beings who are typical of the present age and who are participating in the evolutionary growth of the Supreme. Group 3. Status as of the future universe ages. Beings in this category include the creature trinitized sons. They are non-growing in the present age because they are being held in reserve for the post-supreme growth of the future ages. Page 251, paragraphs 1 to 4. Page 253, paragraph 2. This is a picture of the overlap of three growth techniques. The first age, the age of non-growing Havona perfection. The second age, the age of the finite and evolutionary growth of the Supreme Being. And the third age beings, beings who are non-growing because they are not in the Supreme, in the sense of sharing his growth. Beings who are being held in reserve in order to participate in the post-supreme growth of the outer universes. Section 6. Post-supreme growth. Growth in the outer universes. We may go back to recapitulate our study of the relation of the actual and the potential triodities in relation to the transcendental domains of the ultimate. We know that the actual functions in and upon the ultimate, that the potential is manifest with the ultimate, and that both triodities are concerned with the appearance of experiential deity, including the ultimate. We may, however, take note of an important difference. Page 1261, paragraphs 3 and 4. Experiential creation and evolution is, in essence, the conversion of potentialities into actualities. This is accomplished by experiential evolution in the finite and experiential eventuation in the absentite. The point to be noted is this. The principle of growth is the same, but the finite technique is different from the absentite technique. In the finite, it is experiential evolution. In the absentite, it is experiential eventuation. We know what post-supreme growth will not be like. It will not be like the kind of growth that characterizes the present universes. That kind of growth is a part of the Supreme, and it will stop when he stops growing, when he has finally emerged. Page 1280, paragraph 6. When the growth of supremacy comes to an end, then what will post-supreme growth be like? We are informed that, page 353, paragraph 7, outer space citizens will be deficient in one very important quality: finite experience. Page 1280, paragraph 7. They will have a post-supreme capacity for growth, which will be based on the fact of the completed supreme being, and will accordingly be non-participating in the growth of the supreme. Page 10, paragraphs 9 and 10. Post-supreme growth will be experiential in nature. Page 13, paragraph 3. It will be evolutionary, eventuational in nature. God the ultimate is now evolving. Page 12, paragraph 6. It may be some type of eventuational growth. The ultimate is a super-supreme eventuation of deity. But we still do not know what post-supreme growth will be like. We probably find it just as difficult to visualize post-supreme growth as did a Havona native who might have tried to conceive of evolutionary growth prior to the arrival of Grand Fanda in the central universe. Neither we nor the Havoner can actually think outside the concept frames inherent in our respective experiences. The Havoner probably had to meet the mortal ascenders in order to be able to conceive that such persons could actually exist. And we will probably have to meet the outer spacers in order to be able to conceive of them. We can, however, be sure of one thing. Post-supreme growth will be something entirely new in the universes. It will not be like anything that has ever happened in the first or the second age. We cannot visualize post-supreme growth, but we can take inventory of the potentials that will be operative in the outer space regions. These would logically embrace the following: post-finite, post-supreme, tertiary supreme, absonite, transcendental, ultimate, and pre-absolute. Growth in the outer universes will have a meaning for finaliters, and undoubtedly for their colleagues as well. The papers state, page 1226, paragraph 4, Urantia mortals have a type of personality that contains three dimensions of self-expression or person realization that are realizable on the absonite level. Our growth in the Supreme has nothing to do with the realization of the first three and prior dimensions of personality. And our post-Supreme growth will have to do with the opening up of these three additional dimensions, dimensions for which there is no possible expression in this present age of the evolutionary growth of the Supreme Being. Section 7, post-ultimate growth. What will growth be like after the emergence of God the Ultimate, after the completion of the whole Master Universe? The papers have the following to say. Page 4, paragraph 12. Post-ultimate growth is something that must take place beyond creative levels. The ultimate is presented as the final creative level of deity reality. Page 4, paragraph 13. If growth is to continue beyond the creative level, then it would have to be some form of super-creative growth. Page 4, paragraph 12 and 13. Post-supreme, or ultimate growth, is something that has to do with super-personal values. Post-ultimate growth has to do with values and divinity meanings that are transcended super-personal. Page 2, paragraph 13 and 14. Post-supreme, or ultimate growth, takes place on the absonite level. Here, time and space are transcended. Beyond this level, on the post-ultimate level, the status would be timeless and spaceless, absolute. Post-supreme growth is difficult enough to imagine. Post-ultimate growth is just about impossible. Nevertheless, the finaliters are likely to find that they are to become involved in this kind of growth sometime in the very remote future. Consider the statement. Page 1237, paragraph 4. Among other things, fusion with a thought adjuster adds a phase of qualified potential absoluteness. Page 1226, paragraph 14. Urantia mortals have a type of personality bestowed upon them that contains a seventh and supreme dimension that is an associable absolute, and though it is not infinite, it still has the potential for sub-infinite penetration of the absolute. And on page 1169, paragraph 4, mortals have a potential destiny that is absolute in value. Turn it off, please. Father says mothers have a mammalian law too, which fathers don't know anything about. Fathers love their children because they see the man that's in the boy and the woman that's in the girl. We see the potential there. That's the best thing I can do to illustrate how human beings think outside of time. One of the reasons you parents, I think, are intemperate in relation to their children. They see their own weaknesses in the children, know how expensive they've been, and are totally emotional and completely unwise in their reaction to these weaknesses in the kids. I speak forlornly as a parent who failed in that area.
Are you speaking to Mrs. Wilson?
Huh? I said parent. As you progress in the universes, something stops so that something else can start.
Each time you take a step forward, you leave something behind for good. Right. There'll never be another universe like Kamona, which is inherently perfect. I only need one. Why have more than seven super universes? They're big enough. For the time being. In outer space, we don't start with finite imperfection. We start out with absolute incompletion. I'm not so sure the word imperfection is proper out there. The word incomplete, I'm sure, is proper.
How do you think that is, Bill?
Imperfect? Mm-hmm. I don't... Absonite, sure. Kind of high up to me. I can think of an absonite as...
Why?
Finite?
Mm-hmm.
When the supreme being stops growing, finite experience is all up.
That's
yeah. He's used it all up. And he can use it up because it's limited. It's finite. You can come to an end of a finite. You can come to an end of an absonite too, but it takes a lot longer. Hmm? The finite experience is all over. Yep, I can find it in here quicker. Page 353, paragraph 8.
Well, I got paragraph 7, so I guess I would come to it.
No. That's probably the tail end of the part of the finality.
Bell and the actual.
One more, yeah.
Big constant, I see the
No, the other way around.
The other way around, but...
Oh, I know it's the other way around, but what's going to keep us from getting outside it?
Because the potentials are infinite.
Potentials are without death.
Everything's trying to become an actual.
Yeah.
We're all trying to actualize.
That's right. Non-survival is reverse English motion.
But after the first kicking out, or the first pitching of the ball,
yeah.
There'll be no more pitching.
Doesn't have to be. It was an infinite cell.
The potential is infinite.
Yeah.
Bottomless.
You've heard of the bottomless.
I know it's
a
bottomless well.
Yeah.
You just
keep
in another bucket of water.
I've got a... Well, actually, there is a circuit in line. See if I can find this thing in here. I guess it's enough stuff.
There'll be any actual from where you just
it'll be very small compared to the cosmos.
It'll
be just a kernel, Bert. Just a kernel.
Still working on about 1/10 of the first 1% of the tenth.
Looks like you'll be able to nice
it in there. 1/10 of 1/10 of 1/10. What's 1/10 of the infinite? Certain sight. You're not still worried about the actual giving something back now.
I'll have to pick that ball.
You know, I got so darn much stuff here, and I'm not too sure what you send these things are. I got to learn what I got here now.
But you had to look a week to get
it down.
Yeah.
Well, my
sin. Thank you all. I verified
what we did this morning. I'm not going to find it. That's
okay.
No, I used the expression, the fifth, we're up against a situation where we have the irresistible force of an absolute trinity coming up against the immovable infinity of the three original absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened here, see? Partial penetration, qualitative penetration.
So it's going together.
A compromise. Infinity resists quantitatively and gives qualitatively. No, not unless you hit a stone wall. You don't hit a stone wall.
You can't hit a stone wall for this thing.
The father figured out the...
You can't even goof it up, really.
The father set the pattern in the beginning. He starts out in what looks like a status, in immobility. Now, if he could break loose from infinity, they'll find ways and means of taking that hurdle at the tail end, from a qualitative standpoint, not quantitative.
Hmm?
Well, of course, to the Universal Father, all this is.
It means everything is, period.
Yes, it is now. There is no past or present. A past or future to God.
Everything is now.
It's now. Now, in the Supreme Being, he knows the past, present, and future. He's hooked into the Supreme. He shares in the consciousness of the Supreme. And so he has a complete experience of birth, growth, and destiny as deity.
Again, it's given to you that God is.
Yes. Through the thought adjuster. He participates in human experience. Through a creator son. He participates in local universe evolution. Through the master spirit. See, all of these different levels of consciousness are available to God. And I think this is how he is enriching his self-realization. God can't change the values of things because all values are infinite. And they were all here to begin with. How can he add to that? So he can change meaning. Value can be transformed from actual to potential. But you can't increase or decrease the sum total of an infinite cosmos. It's always been. But you can change the relationships within that cosmos. As far as God, as far as the Father Absolute is concerned, the seraphim are just as real the moment before creation as they are afterwards. But that sure is not true on sub-absolute level. And of course, to those who are standing by and looking, they came into being out of apparent nothingness. Where does your soul come from? It's a reality and it's growing. It's an embryo. It's got stuff in it. Marantia stuff. That stuff comes from somewhere. It doesn't come from nowhere. Right. The wine that was poured out of Cana came from somewhere. And of course, this requires an actual physical assembly of water, chemical elements, and evidently they have some pretty good organic chemistry. Yeah, because it was pretty good vintage wine, better than they'd had at the beginning of the season.
All potential has to work through the ultimate, I guess.
I think so. Then they're available for use. Potentials have to work through the ultimate to get to the Supreme. I think that is partly true, although I think the triadities also may hit the Supreme direct. There's a suggestion they work both ways. Practically speaking, I think of them as coming through the ultimate. Potentials, I think, descend through the ultimate to the Supreme to become finite actuals. And then with the Supreme, return to the ultimate as actual in an effort to penetrate the absolute. There's your cycle.
Mm-hmm. Is that a figure of speech that they refer to the actuals being on paradise and the potentials being in outer space?
Partly figurative and partly literal.
Of course, the universally unqualified absolute, I mean, you think of.
Yes. Well, where's the greatest amount of creation going on? It's probably out here. And will be in the first outer space level someday. And is always moving spaceward, away from paradise. But when the potential becomes actual, then it seeks for paradise coherence. And becomes subject to some form of gravity centering in paradise.
Being in space doesn't necessarily mean it would be working.
No. There's some poetry in there, too. Let me show you a cycle of a physical nature here.
Let's take a look at page 469, where they give you this big sweep of energy. This starts out with space potency, which is referred to as absoluta. Now, to me, that's very interesting. They give it the feminine Latin ending of a noun, in contrast to the stuff of paradise, which is given the neuter ending of a Latin noun, absolutum. Now, I guess it's masculine, isn't it? Which is it? Yeah, is neuter. This starts out as absoluta and then becomes segregata. To me, that means that which has been segregated from that which is pre-segregated or undiffused space potency. And I think there's just one person that's got a crowbar big enough to pry something out of the unqualified absolute, and that's the conjoint actor. Your next designation is ultimata. And to me, this whole emergent field of emergent energy represents the activity of the ultimate. You also got the master spirits in there, too. Your next level is gravita. Here is where linear gravity takes over. And this is the domain of the supreme, the domain of power directors. So far, we've been coming down, haven't we? And now we start back up again. Triada, Trinity origin energy. Trinosta, transcendental energy. Monota, absolute energy again. You start with the absolute of energy potential, and you wind up with the absolute of energy actual. And I believe if we had better words and better understanding, this could be done for spirit and this could be done for mind. But I just think that's beyond our conception. Yes. When a creative spirit generates mind, whence comes this mind? It comes from something. And it comes from the potential for mind present in the grand universe presence of the Supreme. Here's where she gets the flax that she weaves into the thread, out of which she manufactures the fabric of mind. The spirit natures of these seraphim come again from a floating spirit potential in the local universe. And to say that a being is a creator, all you're saying is, this being has the tools and the equipment which enables him to reach into potentials directly and pull them out. Human beings have limited powers of creativity. The personality is relatively creative. The adjuster is relatively creative. What is manufacturing this soul? But the personal mind and the adjuster jointly are able in a limited way to reach into the same drawer for potentials and get Marantia reality and weave it into this soul.
Where are they going to get the potential for mind?
It's
from
here.
The infinite spirit?
No,
from
I
natural?
Think supreme mind, I think.
But the supreme mind is just over the infinite spirit.
Right, but I think the possibility for finite mind is present here in the grand universe. And before that mind exists, its potential was still here. Put it this way, on the human level, the possibility for the unborn next generation is right here, isn't it? Now, we don't know what they're going to be like, but we know that they're possible. So that's another way of saying the next generation is potential in the germplasm of the living generation of men. It just hadn't been expressed yet.
there anything in the book that says that the universal magistrate would in any way have the mind's potential?
They're a little silent on the subject of mind. They speak much more freely about matter and spirit.
I didn't remember.
What is mind, Bill?
What?
What is mind?
I don't know. Any more than I know what personality is or life is. We don't know any of these bases. Webster's Unabridged Dictionary starts out by defining personality as quality or state of being personal. There's one with a tail and mouth. That's no definition.
There is just one else.
Yeah.
You can't describe it, you can only feel it. Or be
right.
By it.
The paper on personality survival, I think it's 116, the inventory, the functions of personality. But that's not a definition of personality.
No.
Yeah, that's right. That's the guy that lived the life of Riley, and it was hell when Riley came home.
Riley started again.
to me, growth is nothing but taking advantage of the possibilities of the present, and that includes the potentialities of the present. And the papers tell us how we should grow. We start out with sincerity. Sincerity and more sincerity. These are the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and all men have these keys. And we make progress in the kingdom by decisions, and by more decisions. And if you are sincere, and if you've got courage, you'll learn. And if you start out in total error, as the chances are we do, we'll profit by our mistakes, and little by little, by the cut and try method, we will have less error in our plans. And that, to me, is part of the answer to that statement in the scripture that all things work together for good. But there's a condition attached to that, and the condition is to those who serve God, and to those who know God and desire to do His will, isn't that it? You see, you're trying, and if you're trying to do this, then you are moving with the mass momentum of creation. You are working, you're attempting to work with the grain of evolution. And if you're not trying to do this, you are bucking the tide of providence.
Right. Well, don't you think that a man first must be aware of his own potential and creation, whether it might be intellect or whatever it might be, before you can get a hold of them to do much with them?
Except this. Spirit can operate in the absence of intellectual insight. And this is what makes it so darn fair. It short-circuits all IQ. The Alpheus twins, and Lord knows they would have flunked a mental Watson test. The Alpheus twins were able to do this with love. The Alpheus twins loved Jesus, and they were right on the beam without thinking it through at all. They felt it, and it worked for them. And Judas Iscariot, who had a pretty good IQ and a pretty good education, dropped the ball. If it was brains alone, Caligastia rated as one of the more brilliant Leonidics, and so did Lucifer.
So it's more than the heart.
Now, if you can add brains to spirit direction, then you've got leadership. This is what Van had. Then you've got a rallying point. Van was as true as Amadon, and Van was smart besides. And Van stood up and read off the planetary prison. And Lucifer. Then you've got something tremendous.
It must come from love.
It starts with love. It starts with sincerity. And then you have courage. Oh, yeah. Yes, much. Love is the greatest thing of all.
Love is the
source of faith.
Speaking of Jesus, apostles, the last time we studied this passage, it struck me how he took them as they came, you might say. It's like you walk down the street and have to put a map on it. selected two or three. The rest of them came through those.
Right.
He accepted them. There was no record of any rejection.
When you come right down to it, he selected no one.
Did he
all
selected two. Let him select Peter.
Andrew selected Peter. Brian selected Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew selected Peter.
Andrew was first
time. Then Andrew selected Peter.
Well, then
James and John came.
How bad did he have to
come? He came on his own initiative.
Right.
Yeah, not the one who had to lose.
Matthew
had to lose. No, Andrew came to Peter. And then, I'm sure. And then Andrew brought Peter. And that evening, James and John came down.
Oh, Carlos,
what are they looking for?
For the tenant.
I think I'll take a little coffee for just a little.
When you come right down to it, Jesus did not actually choose one of those 12. They chose themselves, or were chosen by one of the 12.
How would you like to go out here and start to get a company together and just take
care
of a volunteer to try
mm-hmm.
to work with them?
Well, you have to choose no one like Jesus to make it work.
You'd have
to. Everybody wants to choose no one.
Yeah. Well, I think the greatest succeed of any company trying to work in the company is our own ego gets in our way instead of the source of what we're working to. The thing that wears you out is ego dignity, not work. That's in the paper.
Can I talk to one about my
sister? We were just talking.
Yeah.
Who?
Who?
Oh, Luke.
You talking about Sina? Were you there working on it? Ellen was.
No, I
wasn't there. Yeah, I wanted to get to him. He said all of his was, he had to get it from her birthday and second and third and fourth.
Look, was it like a newspaper report? Taking out a story. What?
Excellent one.
Yeah.
He did it through love, it's obvious, because Well,
Luke, as the papers say, was a humanitarian. Luke loved people. And therefore, his narrative of Jesus' life is redolent with evidence of Jesus' love for the people. There's many stories of Jesus' love for people.
So they had that in common love. Well, there you go, that's the word love again.
But Chuck, he missed a great deal on the story
I'm saying this verbatim. I never thought of it before. There was no reason for him to. I'm thinking that he might.
No.
He's just trying to back up what he already been talked about. And there's many of them interpretations, of course. Christ's life of the child. At one thought, an excellent job, and I never thought about it before. Not.
I don't think it's wrong. I had just finished it when the Gaffney Rancher book, and I said to Ben Sager, tell me, which one shall I believe? And he looked me right in the eye, and he said, you believe that, because he is peace. I've never forgotten.
And that cut me loose
from the
Islam,
and just a week or two, I was
pretty
loose.
Well, it's certainly wrong. That's my evaluation of what I'm getting to do. I don't think anything I think is wrong with the person that's believing for them.
So, hey,
Bill,
and Jesus.
Oh, both of them.
Yeah, which
one?
Bill and
Jesus,
the one
when he came down the mountain.
I think this boy was probably not very well integrated and probably semi-feeble minded.
There's nothing in there that indicates he is.
Well,
it's just that he was, had a nervous system. But it doesn't take anything to indicate that he was.
Well, in Midwinter, in Midwinter's work with the reservists, and they do this by entering the human mind, I think. And I think these rebellious Midwinters were doing the same thing, except they were up to no good purpose. This can be a very benign thing, or this can be a sinister thing, as was the case here.
They can still do that?
No, not since the arrival of the adjusters in the third of two. See, this boy may not have been adjuster at all. This is before the pulling out of the third of two. This is now technically impossible.
But there's nothing in there that indicates that he was
feeble-minded. Well, I'm going to say maybe he didn't have a fellowship. Maybe he didn't have instilled in spiritual defense.
How could a Christ make him well, then, Mike?
He had authority. And those who could take the Midwinter's hand were there. They were prepared to take him in hand when they were instructed to.
Now, this is another case. I wonder how many there are of them. Maybe Bill knows.
I don't.
Jesus healed through the faith of another person. Not the faith of the person healed, but through the faith of another person. This is two we've had in 3 weeks.
James of Safford was one. The centurion was another.
And the other was a woman who came and they tried to send her away.
That
had a pet daughter.
No.
The woman her brought her little girl and they all tried to send her away because she was Greek.
Veronica, that's another one. That was when they were up in the Phoenicia.
Mm-hmm.
There are three.
At three so far.
Of course.
I'm not so sure there are others.
Jared's daughter, likely.
Was Jared's daughter being there?
Well, that was the centurion, wasn't it?
No.
That was supposed to be
well, I have never counted those.
There was one in the kitchen
down there.
Yeah,
but it was. This Syrian woman.
She's
so Greek. Syrian woman is so Greek. No, I think
you
spoke.
I'm sorry, I just
wanted
to.
How many other cases?
Well, he might not have been a jester as well.
And they definitely weren't indwelt by the spirit of truth.
No, there was no spirit of truth on the planet at all.
Before
Pentecost.
In a different way.
Mm-hmm.
We were discussing some of this at lunch today.
Uh-huh.
We are studying these teachers right now over here, and the teachers of Jesus on our Wednesday night class. You're probably interested in that. What do you think about spiritual healing?
I think it's psychosomatic.